Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. We are joined today on this Friday morning by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, as always, great to have you on the mic. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners and their clients.
Thanks, Dan. It's always good to be with you, and hope you had a great week.
Absolutely. So plenty to catch our clients, our listeners up on. Perhaps today we can begin with government funding as lawmakers continue to work to avoid a government shutdown by the end of this month, coming up on September 30th, just a couple of weeks away at this point. So Shane, where do efforts stand today and what are some notable roadblocks?
That's right. We're just over 2 weeks away from a potential government shutdown. And, you know, as you may remember from the background, there are 12 separate bills that fund the different government departments and agencies, right? And the House and Senate have advanced a few of these, but they have not completed work on any of them. So there's still 12 bills that, in theory, need to become law for government to be funded. And, you know, you and I have done this long enough that we know that they're not, that Congress is not going to agree on 12 individual bills between now and the end of the month. So, you know, that leads to the question of what happens next. And, you know, if there are no agreements, you know, we could be faced with a shutdown, right? And so you do see some progress being made by primary negotiators, chairmen and women of the Appropriations Committee working with the Democrat leaders of the Appropriations Committee. And they seem to have come to agreement on maybe three of the 12 bills on kind of the parameters of it. And I think that may lead to them agreeing to those three bills, which I believe are a legislative branch, military construction, and agriculture, to those maybe getting completed before the end of the month. And then that can serve as a basis to extend government funding for a certain period of time, you know, maybe somewhere in the November, December range. And that will give a little bit more time to work on the nine remaining bills. Now, this is very fluid. You have President Trump who is asking for a deadline to be January 31st, 2026. To allow plenty of time and for negotiation. That's a little too much for many Democrats and some Republicans, as they want to keep the pressure on and have a shorter time frame so that they are pushed to really complete their work. You know, Democrats are really pushing for the inclusion of an extension of a certain Affordable Care Act tax credits, Obamacare, if you will, that are set to expire at the end of the year. But most Republicans don't want to include that in a government funding bill. They view that as something that should be dealt completely with completely separate. And there are a number of Republicans that don't believe that these tax credits should be extended at all. So it's going to be a little bit of a fight. And, you know, we think there's a fair chance of a government shutdown, but progress is being made. The one thing I'll note, I think, well, you know, I say this anytime you and I have talked about government funding, which is that a government shutdown is not a huge market event. So it's something worth keeping an eye on, but we shouldn't have it in our minds that, you know, this would be a cataclysmic event for the markets.
Well, Shane, thank you for the clarity there on potential market implications, impact, and this is something we will continue to follow in conversations over the next couple of weeks. Now, if we stick with Congress, we've also been tracking debate in the Senate, this around the National Defense Authorization Act, which did resume this week. So where does that stand?
That's right. So the House actually passed their National Defense Authorization Bill, which was just under $900 billion in authorization. Now, this is a bill authorizes the funding, but it doesn't actually include the funding. So it's kind of a two-step process here. But this does put forward a lot of the policies in place for, you know, how the Pentagon will spend that money. And And this is, you know, the House, because of its nature and can pass a partisan bill, this is a much more partisan bill than what the Senate is trying to pass, which would need to be bipartisan, right? However, Senate Minority Leader Schumer took a threw a curveball, we'll say, this week when he forced a vote on an amendment to have the Justice Department release the Jeffrey Epstein files. And this, you know, angered many Republicans, as while they may be on that side that these files should be released, they're really trying to keep this a bipartisan bill and have this move along, as this bill has been enacted for 64 consecutive years. And so, you know, I think the Senate's going to get over this hurdle and maybe pass this bill next week, which will lead to a conference, which will take probably about 2 months. And, you know, I think this we'll see this bill passed into law later this year. But there are going to be some hiccups along the way. And I think, you know, that's what we're seeing right now in the Senate.
And Shane, if we stick with the Senate is also in the process of voting on several Trump administration nominees. Who are some names, positions to watch for?
Yeah, that's right. The Senate has teed up a vote for 48 separate nominations. And, you know, this runs the gamut of, you know, ambassadors, sub-cabinet positions, and other executive nominees. You know, like some examples are, for ambassadors, Kimberly Guilfoyle to Greece and Calista Gingrich to Switzerland. An example of the sub-cabinet would be former Congressman Brendan Williams to be Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Security. So a lot of a number of important positions. However, this is something that started before August, which was Republicans growing increasingly frustrated with the pace of passing these nominations. Democrats are insisting using up all 30 hours of debate, which means it's extremely slow process to get these nominations. You know, in previous years, we've had much more bipartisanship where, you know, if the person is truly a bipartisan pick, you know, they wouldn't use the 30 hours. So that way you could pass several nominations in a week versus just one or two. So there's a backlog of, I think, about 120 nominations. And so the Senate this week came very close to reaching an agreement of how to move forward, not only on this tranche of nominations, but the future, which would allow Republicans to, you know, get through most of the backlog in a few weeks. This agreement kind of seems to have fallen apart. And Republicans are now moving right now to change the Senate rules for the sub-cabinet level nominations so that they can move more quickly. And so if that does take place, the so-called nuclear option, we'll see next week the Senate start processing these nominations much quicker. And, you know, I think Republicans view this as an unfortunate development, but necessary, as it's just become too time-consuming and prevented them from really focusing on other work like appropriations and, you know, defense authorization, et cetera. So more to come here, but I think, you know, the writing is on the wall that it's going to be a new day when it comes to these sub-cabinet nominations, and they're going to be processed much quicker.
Yeah, very interesting developments on that process, and we will see what next week delivers. Before we close out for this week, Shane, it is worth bringing up how recently the U.S. government has been taking direct equity stakes in private companies. Now, while not unprecedented, it's not common practice. So what's unique about these latest instances, and is there more to come here?
Yeah, that's right. You know, this has happened before, you know, where the government's taken a stake and U.S. companies, but that was more kind of as a crisis moment where it was deeply important to the underlying sector and industry and, you know, often the U.S. economy. And the U.S. government, you know, looked to exit its ownership pretty quickly. This looks a little bit different where, you know, the government's share in Intel is looking to be almost the start of a sovereign fund for the U.S. And, you know, I think the U.S. government is also eyeing, I think, the defense industry next from, the Trump administration's perspective. You know, much of the defense industry, that 90% of their consumer is the U.S. government, right? You know, while the U.S. Companies do sell, let's say, F-35s to certain countries, that has to get approved by the U.S. government. And there are limitations, obviously, of what countries we're going to allow to have, you know, our most advanced technologies. So, you know, the U.S. kind of views it as, the Trump administration, I'd say, views it as, you know, you're making money off of U.S. taxpayers. The U.S. should get some benefit from that. So I think there's more to come here on this, to your point. And this will be an interesting storyline, I think, for all of us to follow. And, you know, especially from the market perspective, not only in coming days and weeks, but months and possibly years.
Well, Shane, as always, great catching up with you. Thank you for dropping by, spending some time today with our listeners and our clients, and do look forward to continuing with our conversation next week.
Great. Looking forward to it. And thank you for the time. Have yourself a good one.
Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. As always, before we close out, I would like to remind you, our listeners, and especially our clients of UBS, you can now locate the latest Washington Weekly publication, which is available for you now up on UBS.com/Washington Weekly. And for clients of UBS, please reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the Washington Weekly publication directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit UBS.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit UBS.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at UBS.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.